Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It's a pleasure to stand before you all tonight. If you've got your Bibles with you, go ahead and open up to 1 Timothy chapter 1. I'll be starting there momentarily. Before I begin, I'd like to say it's an honor to be able to stand before you. Appreciate the invitation. I'll have to ask some of the other members, but I wonder if there's been a speaker that's been spoken of so much in the morning service who's then stood before you in the evening service. So I just heard that Charles said a lot, and hopefully I'll do all right tonight. But I appreciate his encouragement, and I'm definitely looking forward to listening to his lesson this morning. 1 Timothy chapter 1. This is the first letter we have from the Apostle Paul to the young evangelist Timothy. And if you'll notice in 1 Timothy chapter 1, we're going to look down at verses 18 and 19. Would have helped if I had 1 Timothy up there. There we go. Okay. 1 Timothy chapter 1, beginning in verse 18. "This command I entrust you, Timothy, my son, in accordance with the prophecies previously made concerning you, that by them you fight the good fight, keeping faith and a good conscience, which some have rejected and suffered shipwreck in regard to their faith. Among these are Hymenaeus and Alexander, whom I have handed over to Satan so that they will be taught not to blaspheme." There's something about ships. Something about ships and shipwrecks that is unique to that type of vessel. We have romanticized shipwrecks. You'll see on the screen, this is a picture of the Titanic, probably one of the most famous ships in history. Ships are built to float. Ships are built to carry things, to carry people, to travel from one place to another over water. But when I say Titanic, oftentimes you won't think of this image, you'll think of this. You'll think of the ship sinking. The fact that it was on its maiden voyage, the fact that it was built so magnificently and that the builders boasted this is an unsinkable ship. And yet, on its first voyage, it runs into an iceberg and it sinks. And the tragic loss of life that followed after that. And there's something that gets romanticized about that. Why is that? What is it about shipwrecks that's so alluring to people? Is it the fact that there is such a large loss of life that's associated with it? Is it the fact that something has happened to this vessel that's not supposed to? It's supposed to float, but yet it sinks. I'm not really sure, but that's what I want to talk about tonight. What's mentioned in verse 19 when we're talking about having a shipwrecked faith? What is it that can cause us to have our faith shipwrecked? And what can we do to avoid those types of tragedies? Because when a faith is shipwrecked, it's not like another ship. It's not, you know, a loss of cargo. It could be a loss of life, but really what's most important is it's a loss of faith. It's a soul that's in jeopardy, and if they're not rescued, it could lead to their destruction. So let's look at this. Let's see. Part of the issue is sometimes sinking is due to negligence. I don't know if you've seen these before or not. This is a demotivator. It's kind of like the motivator posters, but it's the opposite. Instead of encouraging, it actually demoralizes. And I've always liked this one. It's a picture of a ship that's sinking, and it says mistakes. It could be that the purpose of your life is only to serve as a warning to others. Oh, that's a real encouragement, isn't it? Yeah, but we know people like that. In fact, the Bible has examples of people like that that really don't amount to much. All they really do is live a life that's contrary to what God had intended them to do. And so when they finally perish from their bad choices and the consequences, their life really serves as a warning to others. Don't do what they did. And that's a sad tragedy because these sinkings are oftentimes avoidable. Negligence is the contributing factor, and certain obstacles can be avoided. Things like icebergs, certain types of weather. You know, if you know there's going to be a storm, if there's going to be a hurricane across the path that you're traveling, you don't have to go through that storm. You can avoid it. Heavy cargo. You know, those tell you what the limit is. But, well, maybe if we can add an extra 100, 200, 300 pounds on top of that, be able to get a little extra cargo, we'll be able to get a little bit more when we get to port. No, you don't want to do that. And navigational errors. I don't need maps. I don't need GPS. I know how to get there. Really? Because once you get out on the water, it all looks the same. And that's avoidable. That's avoidable. Look at this. In 2 Timothy chapter 2, verses 16 and 18, Paul writing to Timothy here, he says, "But avoid worldly and empty chatter, for it will lead to further ungodliness, and their talk will spread like gangrene. Among them are Hymenaeus and Philetus, men who have gone astray from the truth, saying that the resurrection has already taken place, and they upset the faith of some." Well, here you go. We've got men that are engaging in worldly and empty chatter. And Paul's saying, stay away from it. Don't listen to it. And one of those men is Hymenaeus. That's the same one of the same men that was mentioned by Paul in verse 20 of 1 Timothy chapter 1. Here he is again, causing problems. What are they talking about? Well, in this instance, they're saying that the resurrection's already happening. Jesus isn't coming back. There's not going to be a second resurrection. There's not going to be some sort of grand reunion in heaven. So just live your life the way that you want to, because nothing matters at the end of the day. And Paul's saying, stay away from that. Avoid that type of chatter. Because when you do, that's going to wreck people's faith. They're going to start to question. They're going to start to ask. And these aren't questions that lead to strengthening faith. Rather, it just opens more problems. What are you talking about, the fact that Jesus might have had a child with Mary Magdalene? What are you talking about, that the church actually has a bunch of interests in the Middle East? What are you talking about? All this empty stuff that people find time to start to gossip about and whisper in each other's ears, things that don't contribute to the building up of the faith. Rather, it's just throwing more obstacles in people's paths. And like Paul says in verse 17, it spreads like gangrene. It's infectious. People like to talk about issues like that. Because, oh, have you heard about this? No. What on earth is this about? Well, let me tell you. And brother so-and-so, man, they know. So if you want to know more about it, you got to talk to them. And Paul's saying, avoid this. It's empty and it's worldly. It doesn't produce godliness. In Ephesians chapter 4, verses 13 and 14, until we all attain to the unity of the faith and of the knowledge of the Son of God, to a mature man, to the measure of the stature which belongs to the fullness of Christ. As a result, we're no longer to be children tossed about here and there by waves and carried about by every wind of doctrine, by the trickery of men, by the craftiness and deceitful scheming. Children can do that. You can deceive children. You can get them to change their minds on things. But Paul's calling us to be mature, to be adult, to have a faith that's strong. So that way, when these things come along, when these different doctrines show up, it's not going to wreck us. It's not going to cause us to suddenly get looped about and then we find ourselves shipwrecked on the shore. And you'll notice there at the end of verse 14, he's talking about some of this is done by the trickery of men, by craftiness and outright deceit. Yes, some of it can be unintentional. Some of it could be ignorance on my part. I might read something but misread it, and then I go and I tell other people about it, and that can cause an issue. We've got an example of that of Apollos. Remember when he was preaching, but he was preaching the baptism of John. And what happened? Well, Priscilla and Aquila, they heard that, and they took him aside, and they said, "Apollos, let's actually tell you the truth about this." And he listened to him, and being a humble servant, he actually changed his message. He listened to them. But in this instance, there are some that, you know what? It's not by accident. It's by purpose. It's by design. They're actually trying to be deceitful and trying to cause you to question things that you should believe in. And why is that? Well, as we'll talk about later on, it's for their own glory. It's for their own power. 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 20. "Oh, Timothy, guard what's been entrusted to you, avoiding worldly and empty chatter and the opposing arguments of what is falsely called knowledge." There's a lot of knowledge out there today. There are a lot of very intelligent people with a lot of degrees who've gone to a lot of schools, whether it's worldly or biblical, and they'll have a lot to say about a lot of different issues. And they'll write books and they'll write periodicals and they'll post it on the internet and people will share it. It doesn't mean that it's true. But there's a lot of things that have been characterized as knowledge that isn't beneficial at all. It's just a bunch of wasted time and effort. That's why Paul's telling Timothy, guard what you have. This gospel that you received, this message about Jesus Christ, hold on to it. Protect it. Because there's going to be people that will come in and try and insert things into that. Or maybe take away things from that and still present it as the truth. Still say that it's knowledge, but it ends up being detrimental in the end. And Paul's saying that's not the way it should be. You have to hold on to what you've got. Avoid this worldly and empty chatter. It's always going to be going on. It's been going on since the first century, and it'll continue to go on as long as man's here on the earth. We have to hold on to that. So some obstacles can be avoided. Other things are just the fact that the operators aren't paying attention. Instructions aren't always followed. And it's not necessarily the messenger's fault. They could have delivered the message exactly the way it was intended to go, but the person on the other end is like, I might listen to that. I may not. I don't know. 1 Corinthians chapter 10. The entire chapter is devoted to Paul pointing out that, look, the children of Israel were our spiritual examples. Look at what happened to them. The same thing can happen to us. And that's why it's recorded. For I don't want you to be unaware, brethren, that these things happened as examples for us, so we would not crave evil things as they also craved. Verse 7, do not be idolaters, as some of them were. Verse 8, nor let us act immorally. Verse 9, nor let us try the Lord. Verse 10, nor grumble. Verse 11, these things happened to them as an example, and they were written for our instruction. Well, yeah, Paul, but I mean, that's the children of Israel, and that was in the first century, and you know, actually even before the first century, that they were way out in the wilderness, and you know, that's not applicable today. Are you kidding me? Well, I mean, what are we talking about here? Well, how about verse 10, grumbling? Oh, we don't grumble. I might complain. Complain about stuff, complain about my work, complain about my wife, complain about my kids. But, you know, I need to blow off steam. Everybody knows I'm not really being serious. I'm just griping, you know. Well, what about idolaters? Nobody has idols in their house anymore. Well, oddly enough, oftentimes we do, and it's this real nice big square thing that hangs in the living room wall. Oh, well, that's for entertainment. Come on. Really? Because, you know, the more that we look at that, it's interesting. You see how they push things. They push different lifestyles. They push the fact that we can take God's name in vain. They push the fact that we can be sexually promiscuous. They tell us that we can be disrespectful. They tell that the family's not really a husband and a wife. And we accept it. We say, oh, but there's people laughing in the background, so that's okay. And I need to be accepting. And everybody's going to talk about the episode tomorrow, so I want to be able to know what's going on. Isn't that an idol? Or even verse 8, acting immorally. You want to do it? Well, Satan will find a way to let you do it. Live the life that you've always wanted. Have your cake and eat it too. And Paul's saying, look, the Israelites did the same exact thing. They thought they were special because God brought them out of Egypt. But you know what? He brought them out. They did all of these things and they ended up falling dead in the wilderness. What makes you any different?
Well, I've been baptized. I'm a Christian.
Well, but you act this way, you're going to get the same exact thing. Don't be deceived. These things have been written for our instruction. Don't think you can get away with this. And very, very last verse there in chapter 10, verse 12. Therefore, let him who thinks he stands take heed that he does not fall. I got this. I got this. Don't worry about it. Really? Don't be so confident that you don't think that you would ever struggle with something. Don't ever think that I don't need encouragement. I don't need to study. I don't need to spend time reading or praying because I know the answers. That's the wrong mindset. Take heed. Those are the ones who fall. And when they fall, they usually take other people with them. Mark chapter 14 and verse 29. But Peter said to him, even though all may fall away, yet I will not. Really, Peter? Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter if there's an angry mob. Doesn't matter if they're armed. Doesn't matter how many of them there are. Doesn't matter if all the other apostles desert you. I